Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Lord. A lot of good stuff for you for today. Fox 5's Myles Garrett is going to join us from the Senior Bowl to talk about the standouts and the guys that haven't performed up to par through the first 2 days of the Senior Bowl. Chris Sale, we're going to talk about his best attribute, what he brings to the Braves. AJ Minter had a ton of good stuff to say about the newest member of the Atlanta Braves. We're also going to talk about a funny video surfacing from Alex Anthopoulos on the Dylan Cease trade, but we are going to start with Calvin Ridley and some comments, kind of some differing comments. One is Chris Campbell from Walter Football. He says sources say that the Jaguars were frustrated throughout the season with Calvin Ridley because of missed assignments, showing up underweight, stuff like that. He still called for over 1,000 yards, but there were definitely some drop issues combined with that. But at the same time, Jaguars general manager came in and had some glowing things to say and sounding like basically they're going to do everything they can to keep him. I think the decision is going to come down to whether they believe he can be a number one receiver because he clearly wasn't that guy. But I think he's going to get that kind of money. And obviously, from the Falcons' perspective, it's notable because we get a second round pick if they agree to an extension. And if they don't, it will be a third round pick.
I mean, it's hard not to talk about, you know, Calvin Ridley in a disappointing manner because the entire Jaguars season was a disappointment. That goes from Doug Peterson to, yes, Trevor Lawrence was disappointing. The defense didn't live up to its billing. There were individual moments. Trayvon Walker, former number one overall pick. A lot of our listeners are Georgia fans. Trayvon Walker came around. I think at him and Ryan Nielsen's system is going to do wonders for his development, particularly those sack numbers. I don't know what to think about this whole Calvin Ridley situation because to me, I don't know if you can necessarily hold him accountable for the disappointment on the offense. Like I said, Trevor Lawrence was excruciatingly bad at times. And, you know, quite frankly, that's who's, you know, we should be holding whose feet to the fire. Calvin Ridley can only do so much. And I'm not saying Calvin Ridley is free of blame because, like you said, there were some drops, missed assignments. We don't know what the actual task is on any given play. But from where I sit, most of the blame should be put on Doug Peterson, who's the architect of the offense, and Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I think regardless, the Jaguars have to be trying to build around Trevor Lawrence. If you do get rid of Calvin Ridley and move on from him, you're probably going to be going to a rookie wide receiver. Maybe you get someone else in free agency, but are they going to be as good as Calvin Ridley? And then you also have to think about the upside of Calvin Ridley. I mean, the guy still caught for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns, and this is a guy who hasn't played football in a year and a half. And I think the sources from whatever Campbell is, I have no idea how legitimate they are. The underweight part thing kind of confuses me to a degree, especially when the GM said, you know, he loves practice, he loves football. A guy like that is only going to get better with more time on the field because he loves the game so much. So they're kind of deferring comments. Maybe the GM is just having some coach speak moments. Maybe he has no desire to keep Calvin Ridley. But regardless, the Jaguars are going to have to get better around Trevor Lawrence. And I agree. I think a lot of the blame should be on Trevor Lawrence because the guy who was a blue chip, surefire, number one overall pick, the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, heralded as already like a top 10 quarterback before he ever came into the league, has not played like it at any moment. At any moment, whether it's the playoffs, he's had flashes, there's no doubt. But we all knew he was going to have flashes and stuff like that. The consistency has not been there. And I do think Calvin Ridley, with more time on the field, entering the prime of his career, is only going to get better. So if I were the Jaguars, I'd extend him, unless there's really a disconnect between like his attitude and stuff like that, which we know has been a problem. I'm not saying anything against him. It might be a mental health thing or something like that. We don't know. We know he's had those issues in the past. But unless there's a serious disconnect between him and the coaching staff, I don't see why they wouldn't reach some sort of extension.
Yeah, I mean, this Jaguars team, Trevor Lawrence was – pretty spectacular in that divisional round or wild card round against the Chargers some years ago. But other than that, like you said, he has not lived up to the billing of the first overall pick, let alone the generational prospect that many dubbed him to be. And this is the same Jaguars team that gave Christian Kirk just under $20 million annually. And if you're telling me that Calvin Ridley isn't a better player than Christian Kirk, then I don't know what game you're watching. And that's what Calvin Ridley's going to command, somewhere around $20 million. Now, if you want to, if you're talking about giving two wide receiver twos, which is basically what Calvin Ridley is at this point, that's not to say he can't return to that status of wide receiver one. Christian Kirk is certainly a wide receiver two. If you don't want to give two wide receiver twos around $20 million per year, I totally understand that. Obviously, for the Falcons, you know, Falcons, this is Atlanta Talk show. The Falcons want them to extend Calvin Ridley because, like Chase said to begin the segment, if they extend him, this third-round pick we have in the 2024 NFL draft turns into a second-round pick. And when we're talking about the future of the Falcons, we're talking about the quarterback situation, whether it be Justin Fields, whether it be trading up for one of Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or Caleb Williams, that second-round pick is going to become infinitely more valuable. So, obviously, as we sit here today, we want the Falcons to extend Calvin Ridley. But if I'm the Jaguars fan, I'd rather have Calvin Ridley than Christian Kirk.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We'll keep an eye on it the rest of the offseason. Coming up after the break, Myles Garrett joins us to talk about the Senior Bowl. Joining us now on Sports Talk ATL is Fox 5's own Myles Garrett, who is live at the Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. I know we've heard a lot about Ladd McConkey, Roman Wilson. What has stood out the most from you, Myles, so far at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, no, obviously, you said Ladd McConkey. He was the talk of the Senior Bowl yesterday here in Mobile. They're actually out stretching right now. A lot of dog helmets down here in front of me as we speak. But, yeah, no, if we're talking Georgia real quick, Marcus Rosemy, Jack Sane, another name to watch, a guy that has risen up draft charts, according to some insiders who I spoke to here. I think ESPN announced that he was a big riser yesterday. Could be a guy that may sneak his way into the fourth, fifth round type, who was maybe previously an undrafted free agent type thought. But yeah, as far as the Georgia guys are concerned, we all know what they can do. He's a big name for sure. I can't pronounce his last name with Alabama, the defensive lineman, number 92. I'm looking at him right now. But he certainly made an impression yesterday too, beating guys off the block, a guy that, you know, is certainly someone Atlanta could consider just on the defensive line based on, you know, their needs. They obviously need an edge rusher. Should he fit that mold? It's been a big day for the receivers. I think that's something I've noticed. Brandon Rice was a guy that I don't think has had a good day. Obviously, he's been a big name just because of his last name, being Jerry Rice's son. It's funny. We talk about last names. Ed McCaffrey's son, Christian McCaffrey's brother, receiver out of Rice, has looked very good out here, too. So a host of different names. Michael Penix Jr., definitely the best quarterback, in my opinion, that I've seen here so far.
I was about to say, you know, somebody's throwing to those wide receivers over there. So I know Bo Nix is there. I know Michael Penix is there. Obviously, the Falcons are going to be in the market for a quarterback. Well, it's a free agent trade for Justin Fields. One of these drafts, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix. Talk about some of the things you've seen there from Michael Penix and Bo Nix, at least.
Yeah, Bo hasn't had a good day today, especially. From what I've seen, he's been late on some throws, has underthrown some guys, per se. Penix started off a little rusty for me today, but really picked it up when they kind of had full on, I guess it wasn't necessarily 7-on-7, but I guess just kind of scrimmaged reps with guys running routes, obviously getting some pressure in the pocket. He looked very good, and I think we all kind of knew that. I think kind of coming in, we assumed that Michael Penix was that fourth guy. I don't think there's any question about his ability. It's really the injury stuff that you're kind of worried about, and maybe his age when it comes to Michael Penix Jr. Sam Hartman, another guy that has been playing, who I don't think really is on the same tier as other two as well as Spencer Rattler. I'm hearing that the league is a little bit higher on Spencer Rattler than maybe some fans are making it out to believe. Now, I don't believe that personally, but maybe they just see the raw talent that he has. We all know he has it, but he hasn't really been able to put it together.
Yeah, I was telling Chase on our show yesterday that, you know, fans see and scout, self-scout these guys a lot differently than NFL teams do. And you have to consider circumstances and compartmentalizing, you know, the kind of situation that Spencer Rattler was in. That South Carolina offensive line was absolutely horrible. Spencer Rattler, we know who the kind of guy he was coming out of high school, you know, uber talented. I think he was the top recruit in his high school class. He's got all the talent in the world arm-wise. So
I'm not necessarily surprised that some of what you're hearing, that, you know, some of the guys in the NFL are higher on Spencer Rattler than fans are, because as a fan of college football, you saw what he did at South Carolina, and frankly, it wasn't that much. But if we're just talking about projectability, I mean, he's got the arm.
Yeah, no, he kind of falls in the same category. Maybe it's kind of different a little per se as I'm watching him right now, Joe Milton, just as a guy who's just huge, has that rocket arm, can throw it a mile, but hasn't necessarily, or we haven't necessarily seen it all getting put together on the field as some of these other guys might have. Like, I mean, you know, Bo Nix has had his faults, but he's done enough to win games the last couple seasons, especially this past season in Oregon. But yeah, no, to me, the clear best quarterback here, in my opinion, has been Michael Penix.
Yeah, I believe Latu out of, I think it's UCLA, he's out there right now. I believe he's out there. Have you gotten a chance? Because he's definitely a guy, when you talk about the defense side of the ball, high up the board in the first round, he's probably one of the better prospects out there. Has he been making any noise? Have you noticed anything out of him?
Nothing that stands out in particular. He's also a guy that I think doesn't necessarily need the Senior Bowl. I think he's here to you know, obviously he got the invite, but I think he's a guy that these reps won't really impact his draft stock all too much, just because of what we saw out of him in college. But he certainly, you know, we know who he is. He's been a standout here thus far. Maybe not compared to some of those other guys. Like I said, Ladd McConkey was really the talk of the town yesterday, just because of the plays he was making in wide receivers. You see more of that ooh-ah type play when you're watching from the stands. I mean, who knows? It was day one. We still got some time to really assess this. You know, they're going through drills as we speak. We'll see kind of what they go through on those more aligned drills, not just the, you know, the positional drills that are going on right now. So you kind of get a better vibe for that once that's over.
Yeah, you mentioned Ladd McConkey, and me and Chase talked about him yesterday on the show. And I think that, you know, we're Atlanta-based, so we know who Ladd McConkey is. I think a lot of the other country, the rest of the country, is getting to know who Ladd McConkey exactly is. Georgia fans know him. A lot of Falcons fans who are also Georgia fans know who he is. I think a lot of people, if you ask them, they would say he's a, you know, day three, day two, maybe pick. I think he's for sure a second-round pick. He could work his way into the first round. The guy is an absolute superstar. And if you know, we could play matchmaker right here. And thinking of him and Zach Robinson's offense gives you that Cooper Kupp vibes that he feels like he could just be a superstar in this Atlanta Falcons offense with Zach Robinson as the coordinator.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the people who I was speaking to yesterday were saying, yeah, like he may have worked himself into a late first round pick yesterday based on what was going on. Obviously, again, we've still got today. We've got the combine. We've got pro days, all that kind of stuff to discuss. But you're right. I mean, we've seen Georgia play quite a bit. We know what Ladd McConkey can do. And it's funny. I saw this comparison online yesterday that I kind of agree with, just because of his route running ability and the way he moves on the field. I think it's more similar to Antonio Brown. Obviously, that's an extreme example. Antonio Brown at his peak is one of the best receivers we've seen, you know, outside of all the off-field stuff when it comes to Antonio Brown. But as from a pure football standpoint of route running and, like, the chopping of the feet, kind of the way he's able to get guys off of him, it's very Antonio Brown-esque. I think based on what we've seen so far, I think that the big thing for him is just health. Can he stay healthy? We know he had some issues this past season. Didn't have that issue prior to this past season, so maybe it was just a year where he was going through that, trying to work his way back into a lineup that was trying to win a national championship. But he seemed pretty crisp out there. He told us that he was feeling a little bit rusty just because it's been a while for him since he's been fully padded and going 100%. There's no doubt in my mind that he worked himself into a first round conversation yesterday.
Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot right here, but I got to hear, you're there, you know this. I want to know at least one player, you know, that maybe that I probably haven't even heard of, that, you know, especially Georgia fans, Atlanta fans haven't heard of, that has really just started generating some buzz based off maybe even from before this stuff that people have been talking about, or that what happened in the first day.
Ooh, yeah, you did kind of put me on the spot with that one. I might have to check back in after today, because yesterday I was so focused on the Georgia players for our Fox 5 show. I might have to give you a rain check on that one. Just because
we will absolutely take you on later to kind of wrap up the Senior Bowl. That would be awesome.
Absolutely.
I did want to point one thing out, that the Atlanta Falcons, obviously we're an Atlanta sports show. The Falcons absolutely love taking players from the Senior Bowl. Terry Fontenot is still in the building. Obviously, Raheem Morris has replaced Arthur Smith. I don't expect that trend to kind of change in terms of the Senior Bowl. I'm going to list a few off the top of my head. You know, these aren't just like seventh-round guys. These are Richie Grant. He was a second-round pick from 2021. He was at the Senior Bowl. Matthew Bergeron, a second-round pick from last year. He was at the Senior Bowl. DeMarco Hellam, seventh-round pick, kind of played himself into a starter's role. He was at the Senior Bowl. So this Falcons front office takes the Senior Bowl very seriously. Miles is getting us, you know, content from Mobile. You can't get this anywhere else. Sports Talk ATL, Fox 5. Falcons fans should be taking this very seriously because we could see the next Matthew Bergeron, DeMarco Helms at the Senior Bowl this weekend, this Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt. And don't think that because I haven't seen Raheem Morris here that the Falcons aren't here. I've seen a lot of their scouts here. They are, like you said, they very, very strongly scout this game. It's very important for them through their history. Obviously, I know it was really important with Arthur Smith. But Terry Fontenot has been adamant about the Senior Bowl and its importance to finding the right players for this team. So, no, trust me, there's bound to be at least one to two players that they will take from this game.
Miles, I know you're busy. Thank you so much for hopping on with us today, and I'm sure I can't wait to hear what you have to say after the rest of the week.
Absolutely, guys. I'll give you more of a better scouting report coming up when I'm not paying attention to just Georgia players. Yeah, guys, I'll see you later.
AJ Minter was on foul territory, and I'm telling you guys, we talk about this podcast, this show on YouTube a lot. I really suggest you go watch it because they have some great guests. There's former players or the guys that host it. They even have Ken Rosenthal at time. Great show. You should go watch it anytime. It's a great YouTube channel. When you're done watching these, right? When you're done watching these. So he was talking about the addition of Chris Sale, and I wanted to focus on one aspect that he talked about. He talked about how when he's on, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball, yada, yada, yada. We know that. But the one thing he said that stood out to me was the fact that he was like, the biggest thing Chris Sale is going to bring is the clubhouse energy. He brings a little of that FU attitude. And AJ Minter even said it himself. He thinks that's something that the Braves are missing over the last two seasons. They hold him to a World Series or bust standard. Everyone in that clubhouse believes that. But having a guy like Chris Sale, who's really about that life, he thinks will be infectious throughout the entire clubhouse. And I think it's the biggest aspect. Whether Sale pitches well or not with the Braves, I think it's the biggest aspect that he brings to this team.
Yeah, I talked about it. We have talked about it ad nauseum. You know, what is Anthopoulos going to do not to make this team better in the regular season? Because as currently constructed, before Chris Sale, before Jared Kelenic, it didn't matter. This Braves team was going to win 90-plus games, kiss 100 games, probably win the division. What were you going to do to make this team better for October? And he clearly, you know, he bolstered the bullpen. There's like six high-leverage guys in the relief corps. You got a Chris Sale. Now you got four reliable arms. So if one goes down, then you got three reliable arms and Spencer Strider, Max Fried, Charlie Morton, and Chris Sale. And you've got that little-known all-star in Bryce Elder that many people have just written off. Chase is very high on, and a lot of Braves fans should be as well. I think that this is kind of funny, ironic, really, that, you know, a moment after we talked about Alex Anthopoulos not wanting to trade for jerks because it'll mess up the clubhouse chemistry, which is very important, an underrated aspect of winning cultures, is that you do want some jerk in your locker room. You don't want a jerk who's going to mess with your team. You want a jerk who's going to mess with the other team and potentially light a fire in your guys's under your guys's butt. And that's kind of who Chris Sale is. That's kind of who Jock Peterson was. Yes, he was this happy-go-lucky, free-flowing, let's go have some fun. But he's also the guy who's going to get in somebody's face and be like, hey, you're that mother effer. Like, go act like it. And I think that, you know, it's okay to be a little bit jerky as long as you're not messing with the clubhouse chemistry. And I think, like you said, Chris Sale brings that in spades.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Jock Peterson, you talk about Jorge Soler, you talk about those midseason additions, and we talked about it yesterday, how talent alone is not going to win a World Series. You need a little bit of luck in October. You just need that cohesion. You need to just feel fearless because, you know, everything, you're on pins and needles. It's not just the fans. Everyone's on pins and needles. Like, one swing of the bat can change the game, and you have to have that edge about you, that fearlessness. And that's exactly what Chris Sale brought to the Boston Red Sox. Obviously, his time with the Red Sox wasn't as good as his time with the White Sox. But, hey, they won a World Series. He came up big in moments. He in that fire lit a fire under that entire team. And like I said, it's something that is contagious. It can spread like a wildfire. It's something that helps you when you arrive to the ballpark every time in a big game loose. Hey, nobody's going to push us around. And when everyone has that attitude, when a team as talented as the Braves has that attitude, they're going to be nearly impossible to stop, because you saw a team with way less talent in 2021 win a World Series. And if you, a team this talented has that attitude, it's going to be tough to beat in October.
Yeah, I think that the whole attitude of the team is kind of already epitomizing what Chris Sale is bringing to the clubhouse. During this same interaction, or that was a podcast, during Braves Fan Fest, Spencer Strider was kind of asked, you know, just about the goals of the team and the outlook and the roster in general. And what he said was so important. One of the youngest guys on this young roster is basically like, everything other than a World Series is a failure to this team. We have to hold each other to a higher standard. And those sentiments kind of echoed throughout whoever you talk to, whether it's Max Fried, a veteran of the staff, 30 years old, if you're going to Ronald Acuna. Everybody seems like they're pulling on the same rope. Everybody is disappointed with the first round exit. It just feels like it might be a little bit different in Atlanta this year, where everybody is just desperate. We're desperate for a World Series.
Yeah, Braves fans should be excited. Pitchers and catchers report very soon. Coming up after the break, Alex Anthopoulos, another hilarious comment. Braves general manager Alex Anthopoulos was on 680 The Fan, and the way that they ended their conversation was pretty comical. They were talking about, they had some fans sitting there in the window. I'm trying to paint the picture since I can't put the video up on this show. They had some fans sitting in the window trying to be the assistant general manager, giving Alex Anthopoulos some guys that they want him to go after. One of those guys was Dylan Cease. And Alex Anthopoulos, in kind of an atypical measure, actually responded and said they tried, but it was too expensive.
Yeah, I think everybody kind of knows at this point that the White Sox hold all the power. He's under contract for 2 years. They're in no rush to move him. And they can just kind of sit and wait until somebody pays that king ransom. Because, the guy's a superstar. He's durable. He's under contract for 2 years. He's young. He's just entering the prime of his career. And the White Sox hold all the power. The fact of the matter is it's going to take a king's ransom. And if they wait until the trade deadline or even next offseason, teams are going to be that much more desperate to potentially get him and extend him, hopefully before he hits free agency, which we know is unlikely as a Scott Boras agent. The fact is if it's not, a Dylan Cease or Corbin Burns or Aaron Nola, wherever you look, free agent market, trade market, the price for a starting pitcher is so astronomical that when you try and work like Alex Anthopoulos does, which is he never pays sticker price for anything, it's incredibly difficult. They obviously went after Dylan Cease, saw the price, which we can speculate upon, Vaughn Grissom, A.J. Smith-Shawver, and somebody like Hurston Waldrop, like some one of our top three prospects-esque, something like that. Obviously, that's a lot to pay without the guarantee that Dylan Cease is going to sign that contract extension. So what does Anthopoulos do? He doesn't give in to the Freddie Freeman price. He goes out, makes a trade for Matt Olson. He goes out, works a trade with the Boston Red Sox to acquire Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom, who had no immediate role in the Braves organization. It was masterclass, really.
Yeah, now Chris Sale's with the team for 2 years. The likelihood that if the Braves had acquired Dylan Cease was probably extremely low. And when you think about it, if Chris Sale can stay healthy, obviously it's a big if given his injury history, he could be just as productive, if not more productive over that 2 year stretch than Dylan Cease. Now, a guy like Dylan Cease, who's in his prime, coming off 2 years ago, being second in the AL Cy Young race, has some of the best stuff in baseball, high strikeout guy, certifiable ace. Those guys do not come around often. And the White Sox hold all the leverage because as long as he still has two playoff runs left on his deal, which he will at the trade deadline, he's going to be just as valuable, if not more valuable, at the trade deadline than he is right now. So they don't have to be forced to make a move for something that they feel isn't worth it. And they can, you know, reevaluate things in about 3 or 4 or 5 months and see what they can get. And if it's the same thing, okay, maybe they pull the trigger, but they don't have to do it right now by any means.
Yeah, barring injury, I would argue that he'll be more valuable at the trade deadline because desperation is going to creep in some of these teams' mind. Some of these teams that have kind of gone all in on this year, so to speak, they're going to feel that pressure, whether it be from ownership, the fans, or their own minds creeping into the situation. And when desperation enters the conversation, generally so do bad decisions. There's going to be some team who feels the need. They have to have Dylan Cease. And at that point, they're going to meet the White Sox asking price. I mean, it's just going to happen.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things this tells you is there are no ongoing conversations and there will be no ongoing conversations. So if you still have this, you know, pipe dream that Dylan Cease may end up in Atlanta at some point, unless a slew of injuries hit the rotation and the Braves get desperate, I still don't think they would do that because the Braves don't get desperate. They'll just be like, hey, we're going to try to win this with our offense, much like they did in 2021. So I think the Chris Sale thing, people are going to love it. It's a great deal. There's not a lot of risk with it because you only gave up a guy like Vaughn Grissom. Had you gone and given up three of your top prospects and Dylan Cease didn't pan out, and let's say Chris Sale had a better 2 years, you'd be disappointed. Coming up after the break, Kylie McDaniel says the long-term team-friendly extensions may not be favorable for the Braves. MLB insider and prospect guru for ESPN, Kylie McDaniel, went on Foul Territory. Once again, you should go check out the Foul Territory show on YouTube and talked about how the Braves team-friendly extensions are kind of risky and how they aren't set up for future success as well as a lot of people imagine. And the first part of that, I want to acknowledge and say, yes, at the time of those extensions, they were a little bit risky. Ronald Acuna had less than a year under his belt. Spencer Strider, less than a year. Ozzie Albies, less than a year. All these guys had less than a year under his belt. There's the possibility all of them could have turned out and been chumps, and they would be paying a guy $100 million who was like a zero war or one war player or even two war player. The problem with that argument now is the fact that all these guys are all-stars. If you go look at the Braves lineup, they have 7 guys committed to these team-friendly extensions. 6 of them were all-stars last year, and the 7th one is Michael Harris, who's the 2022 NL Rookie of the Year. And I could even argue that if you had an all-star game at the end of the season instead of the middle of the season, which I think is stupid, you should give credit at the end of the season to some of these guys, at least in some form or fashion. Michael Harris would have been an all-star. So you basically have 7 all-stars right there that are proven commodities. And with them being locked into team-friendly long-term rates, you can fill in the holes around them. The Braves' payroll continues to rise. They will have money to spend. Yes, some of these contracts get higher and higher, but we're already seeing that being the case with Ozzie Albies. That's the highest it's going to be. Ronald Acuna, it's the highest it's going to be. Austin Riley, it's the highest it's going to be. Like, you're talking about a few million bucks. That's not going to stop the Braves from getting their guys. Will it stop them from getting Max Fried? They were never going to get Max Fried if they do not resign him. It's not going to stop them from doing anything in the future. So the idea that it's going to hinder the long-term success or the Braves aren't in the best position of all of baseball till the end of the decade is a joke. But I do agree. There was risk in these deals, and the Braves weren't ripping guys off because we see it time and time again with prospects. Michael Soroka, you think he would have taken a $100 or $75 million contract after he nearly won the Cy Young as a rookie? Absolutely. Scott Kingery for the Phillies was handed one of these deals. Turns out he sucked. Didn't work out for them. There are examples of this not working out. The Braves have just nailed all of them.
But the fact is even if one of them does fail, the absurd value that the Braves have gotten from the ones that have already panned out, you know, the Ronald Acuna's, the Ozzie Albies, it's okay if one of them doesn't fail because the other ones have already been immensely valuable. Ronald Acuna Jr. and Ozzie Albies are arguably two of the most valuable players in all of baseball. Ronald Acuna is the most valuable player in baseball in terms of war to dollars and cents. That it's okay if one of these doesn't pan out. The fact of the matter is they already have, and these guys aren't on the wrong side of 30 where, you know, maybe their physical ability starts to decline. No, these guys are 22, 23, 24, 25 years old. There's really no, you know, immediate end to what these guys can do. And you just saw what Ronald Acuna Jr. can be, a guy like him, when his mental ability catches up to his physical ability. I've talked about it a lot. I think that a lot of Braves fans don't really recognize that facet of Ronald Acuna's game, you know, where his walks went way up, his strikeouts went way down. You're going to see the exact same thing happen to Spencer Strider and Michael Harris when the game starts slowing down for them up here. I promise they'll have, and they're already two of the best players at their respective positions. Some would argue Spencer Strider is the best pitcher. So I think that, you know, this seems like a lot of, just talk to talk. But he did mention one thing that is absolutely true about, you know, the farm system. It's got to continue to churn out guys, and that is true. I mean, that's true for a lot of teams. Fact of the matter is the Braves haven't done anything to really show you that isn't going to continue going forward.
Yeah, I mean, they're out of international sanctions. That obviously hurt their farm system a lot. They draft and develop better than any team. They've shown that over the last several years. They almost all of their top draft picks are already in the MLB. That's why their farm system is weaker, because they do draft and develop. They're going to be just fine. They got 5 years, 6 years to refill it. And you talk about that depth and that top-end talent. I mean, this is a team that didn't have Max Fried or Kyle Wright for, you know, they combined got half a season of starts, and they go on and win 104 games. This is a team in 2021 that lost the leading candidate for the NL MVP race and arguably the best player in baseball by positional value, and won the World Series. They do not rely on one guy, and that's what all this surplus value and this top-end talent that they've breathed. It's an incredible breadth of depth, and they don't rely on just one guy. So if one guy does have a little down year or a slump or injured or whatever, they have 6, 7, 8 guys that can pick up the slack. And it is kind of funny to even consider any of these deals bad at this point, because most of them are proven commodities. But like you said, people have to talk, but I do agree. You know, there was some risk at the beginning of these, not so much anymore.
Yeah, for as connected and as well versed as McDaniel really is, he was totally off about the CBT as well. You know, I think we're like $60 or $70 million under the CBT next year. And obviously we'll have to fill the DH position. We'll have to get another starter because Ozuna is going to be out. Max Fried will probably be out. But it's not like we're not going to have money to spend, especially like Chase said, that Liberty Media has promised payroll is going to continue to rise. And it has done nothing but rise. I don't know where McDaniel's getting these numbers from.
We got to go to break, but we're going to wrap up our show. Former Falcons coach Dan Quinn officially hired as the Commanders head coach. Former Atlanta Falcons head coach Dan Quinn has been named the head coach of the Washington Commanders, filling all of the head coaching hires. First of all, I want to talk about Dan Quinn. What do you think about him in Washington?
I think that you would be a liar if you said you weren't shocked by the end result with the Commanders. New ownership. So Dan Snyder's out of there. You can't complain about that anymore. I think they have the second most or the most cap space entering this offseason. They still have a very good roster. They have the second overall pick, so they're going to have their choice of Caleb Williams or Drake May, whoever doesn't go first. Both are, you know, home runs, in my opinion. Can't miss kind of guys as long as you hire the right offensive coordinator. It's just surprising they ended with Dan Quinn. And that's not to say that Dan Quinn isn't a good hire, because I do think he's going to do well there. I think he's a better coach than Riverboat Ron. I do think that Dan Quinn has kind of had this revisionist history with the Atlanta Falcons. He was a good coach during his tenure here. Did he have his faults? Yes, but every head coach has had faults. Nobody is infallible. So I think that, you know, I just thought that they were like the, other than the Chargers and maybe the Falcons, the Commanders were the best opening because of all of those things I listed. I thought, you know, we were just talking before this that Ben Johnson was a shoe-in and he decided to stay in Detroit. Very weird.
Yeah, I think a lot of teams in the NFC East that are rivals with the Commanders are going to be getting their jokes in over the next few months, because I do think ending up with Dan Quinn was definitely not what they imagined. Now, that's not to say Dan Quinn can't be a good head coach in this league, mm-hmm. but like with every guy that's not an offensive coordinator, offensive-minded head coach, it's going to come down to the offensive coordinator hire. You look at Dan Quinn's record with Kyle Shanahan. I mean, they were the best offense in football. They should have won a Super Bowl. You look at Dan Quinn without Kyle Shanahan, he kind of looked like chopped liver.
I don't agree necessarily. Steve Sarkisian was more than adequate at his job, and I think Quinn, that was a mistake. Moving off Sark too quickly and going to Dirk Cutter, that was his ultimate downfall. And there were reports about, I don't know if this is true, that Chip Kelly was going to kind of follow Dan Quinn wherever he went. I don't think that would be a bad offensive coordinator hire, especially for a guy who's going to have to cultivate a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, but let's get into some of the other coaches now that every job is filled. Who's your most intriguing that you're most excited to see next year? Who do you think had the best hire? I think the best hire, hands down, has to be Jim Harbaugh, right? I don't really, at least on paper, going into the season, I'm excited to see him work with Justin Herbert, the best quarterback he's had the chance to get his hands on, and see what a talented Chargers team that's underachieved can do with one of the best head coaches, I believe, in all of football.
Yeah, I think that you could argue it was the best and the most exciting because of the things that you just said. Justin Herbert has not had the kind of support system needed that we deserve as NFL fans. The guy is off the charts talented. You know, can we corral that talent and, you know, kind of maximize that? You know, his ceiling is, you know, non-existent, really. So I would say, you know, maybe the best and the most exciting is Jim Harbaugh. I'm going to go just a little bit north to Seattle. Mike McDonald was one of my favorite candidates for the Falcons. The guy absolutely put some of the best offensive minds the league has to offer in a blender. And for a lot of that game against the Chiefs, they held the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes to 17 points. For a lot of that game, they were doing all they could to hold that Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes offense in check. Obviously, the Ravens offense, Todd Monk and Lamar Jackson, didn't hold up their end of the bargain. So, you know, I think that, you know, Mike McDonald, even though he's following one of the greatest coaches of all time and Pete Carroll, Mike McDonald, I think, is going to do really, really, really well in Seattle. I hope.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the opposite of the Kyle Shanahan thing. You have like all these whiz kid offensive minds. Now you have this kind of whiz kid defensive mind that's put a lot of Kyle Shanahan offenses in that tree in a straitjacket, which we haven't seen from any other defensive coordinators. Oh, and by the way, who are the biggest threats right now in the NFC West? Kyle Shanahan himself and Sean McVay, two guys that are obviously disciples of the same system. So it's a very intriguing fit. A couple guys under the radar guards, I'm excited. First of all, I'm super excited for Antonio Pierce. I thought he deserved that job with the Raiders. I thought for sure the Raiders were going to screw that up because You know that Al Davis loves to go out there and just go big fish hunting, marquee names. I thought for sure they were going to throw the bag at whether it be Jim Harbaugh, which wouldn't have been a bad hire. I'm just saying, I thought they were going to go away with something that I thought really worked in Antonio Pierce. And then another under the radar one is Canales out in Carolina. He gets his hands on Bryce Young. You saw what he was able to do with Tampa Bay and Baker Mayfield. I think you said it this morning. A lot of people are going to delete those Bryce Young tweets. You still have time to do it because he gets a real offensive coordinator around him and some more talent, obviously. I think that could be an interesting pairing.
Yeah, I think Dave Canales, he might not be, you know, a surefire head coach, but the guy has shown an ability to get the most out of, you know, not the most talented quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield had the best year of his entire career under Canales. Before he was in Tampa Bay, he was in Seattle. The reason why Geno Smith has that big contract with the Seattle Seahawks was because of offensive coordinator Dave Canales. So the fact is Canales is kind of a quarterback whisperer of sorts. I think a lot of people are going to be eating crow about Bryce Young. Nobody could succeeded in that Panthers organization. And one more for you, Chase. You know, I'm talking about, you know, Mike McDonald following a great head coach. How about following the greatest coach of all time and Gerard Mayo, potentially, you know, maybe Jane Daniels, it looks like, following Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going to be one of the hotter storylines of the entire season. I think the most surprising hire to me was Brian Callahan, and the fact that it was like the first hire of this hiring cycle. I mean, we talked about how he didn't even really call plays in Cincinnati, and it's not like Cincinnati have this high-flying offense. If you had told me that the number one offensive coordinator, the guy to actually get a job, was going to be Brian Callahan and not Bobby Slowick out of Houston and not Ben Johnson, I would have been like, you're stupid. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, he's credited with helping Joe Burrow and Peyton Manning and these, you know, superstar quarterbacks develop, and Matt Stafford helping these guys. Peyton Manning's a first ballot Hall of Famer, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. Joe Burrow's a top first overall pick, and Matt Stafford's a first overall pick. If you can't develop those guys, something's seriously, seriously wrong with you. Now, he can deserve a little bit of a credit, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and say Matt Stafford and Joe Burrow were just going to be fine with or without Brian Callahan. And, yeah, you know,
go ahead. I mean, you're talking about three guys that could potentially – probably, I know Joe Burrow's early in his career, but all three could be for Hall of Famers by the end of their career. So, yeah, I agree. I think those guys, with or without Brian Callahan, I can tell you one thing. Will Levis, he had some exciting moments, and I do believe he could be a quarterback in this league, but he's not one of those three guys, and that's for sure. He's going to have some work cut out for him.
Yeah, it was a weird hire, and they didn't let him out of the building. Like, he was the first one off the board. Very well.
Yeah, I did not think – I mean, like I said with Ben Johnson and Bobby Sloak, I did not think it would be Brian Callahan as the head coach. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.